Is there a more beautiful place in the 14 worlds? And this is what we can see with these eyes. If only we had eyes that were anointed with the ornament of love, then we would see the beautiful Chintamani forest of Braj, where every tree is a Kalpavriksha tree, where every particle of dust is Chintamani. One time a Babaji told to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj that he had bought a small piece of land in a holy part of Vrindavan where he was going to have bhajan kutir to perform his bhajan. And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji very, very mercifully chastised. What is this nonsense you are speaking, that you have bought a piece of land in Vrindavan? Vrindavan is Sri Radharani's property, Vrindavaneshwari. She is the proprietor of Vrindavan. It is a massive illusion to think that you can be a landholder in Vrindavan. Saravaloka Maheshwaram. Krishna is the proprietor of everything that exists, and Vrindavan is the intimate personal abode of Radha and Krishna. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, with all the wealth of the 14 worlds, with all the wealth of Brahmaloka and Swargaloka, with all the wealth of Vaikunthaloka, you could not purchase even one particle of dust from Sri Brajdham, because that particle is Chintamani, it's a touchstone. So yes, many people are building houses and building temples and so many things, building kutirs. Unless we really are in the mood of service, we're not the proprietor. We are simply servants of the servants of the servants. So yes, every particle of dust is more precious than all the wealth in the Swargalokam and in the Vaikunthalokam. That is Vrindavan. When we see through the eyes of the scriptures and the great souls, then we can begin to understand where we are. We heard the other day how even the breeze of Vrindavan is a breeze that is actually activating and moving Krishna's leelas, assisting in Krishna's leela. And when that breeze touches us, we're being blessed by the embrace of Braj Bhumi, the singing of the birds. If we are Krishna conscious, we will hear the singing of the birds, the chattering of the monkeys, and even the barking of the dogs as the kirtan of the glories of Radha and Krishna. Seek and ye shall find. Yayatamam prapadyante tamstatayva bhajamyaham. As we approach Krishna, Krishna will reveal himself accordingly. If you're really looking for Krishna in Vrindavan, you will hear his holy name even when the rickshaws and trucks honk their horns. Krishna will reveal himself in his dham if we're really eager to find him, eager to remember him. That is why we come to the holy dham, to deeply immerse ourselves in always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna in a favorable mood of servitude. Hare Krishna. In Bombay, We like the sweet singing of the sparrows, but the cocking of the crows is not very nice. But in Vrindavan, even the crows, we should understand these crows are born and raised in Vrindavan. They are not ordinary crows. They may be spirit souls taking their last birth, ready to go back to Goloka. Huh? We don't know. Prabhupada would often say to the devotees in Vrindavan, you don't know who these people are. Malati Devi told that wonderful story about dogs that were harassing the devotees and barking and barking and bothering. And Prabhupada called them and personally with his own hands fed them his own rotis. And then after they took the rotis, they very timidly just kind of bowed and left. And Prabhupada said, do not take anything or anyone in Vrindavan to be ordinary. You don't know who they are. Swarup Damodar Goswami explained that the proper vision is to understand every tree of Vrindavan is a kalpa vriksha tree. The cows are special cows. To be breathing the dust of Braj, to be drinking the water of Braj, to be hearing all of the great souls chanting the holy names in Braj. Very special. Yes, if we want to really make spiritual progress in a substantial way when we come to Vrindavan, we have to try to really deeply contemplate the sanctity of this abode. The very great Mahabhagavat Vaishnavas, they can actually feel and experience Krishna's eternal pastimes taking place at every moment in Vrindavan. And factually, that is the reality. When we are conditioned by the false ego, we can't see anything as it is. We see everything through the glasses, the spectacles colored by our own egoistic conceptions. So therefore it is very nice to see through the ears. In fact, last time we did Braj Yatra and we came to Nandagram, we concluded at Udav Kyari. We may not have the time to go there today, but if you remember, we went there and it was just after sunset. And I was explaining what it used to look like there. Beautiful gardens and forest and trees, and now it's all cut down. It's just an agricultural field. And it became dark. And we were describing the beauty of that place. In the darkness, nobody could see anything. Do you remember? Nobody could see anything. It was very dark. And we were describing the beauty of Udav Kyari and the beauty of Nandagram and the beauty of that forest. And because you couldn't see anything with your eyes, your full 100% attention was on seeing through your ears. And everyone was just actually thinking. Actually, everyone was realizing where they really were. Better than they could in the daylight. Because they couldn't see around us. When we actually got there, it was already kind of dark. They couldn't see anything with flashlights and torches. And I was explaining, what is Udav Kyari? And everybody's, oh, what a beautiful place, what a wonderful place, the spiritual world. So the eyes are a distraction. Because the tendency of the eyes is with these little balls made out of flesh and water and other substances, what can we see? We have to see through our faith. We have to see with our heart. So that was a special night. In the pitch darkness, people actually were seeing Vrindavan through their ears. And then coming back with their torches, stepping on the thorns. Then they were seeing their, they were experiencing Vrindavan through their sense of touch also. But it was a, I don't know how many of you were enjoying that, but there is a great sage who prayed that when the thorns of Braj enter my feet, I feel a happiness millions and billions of times more pleasurable than the happiness of entering into the Brahmajyoti. Dinabandhu Prabhu has told, now you know how miserable that is. That's from one side. From the other side, now we know how blissful the thorns should make us feel. Vaishnavanam yatasambhu. Lord Shiva is very greatest Vaishnava, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Shiva is Krishna, who is accepting a role where he's not Krishna. So he's simultaneously Krishna and not Krishna. Rama Samhita explains, just like milk becomes yogurt, it is nothing but milk, but it's yogurt, or dahi. So Lord Shiva, greatest of Vaishnavas, Mahadev, he performed austerities because he wanted to participate and witness the beautiful, supreme pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. So Krishna appeared to him. And offered him any benediction. This is such something wonderful. Mahadeva is Ashutosh. He's very easily pleased with a devotee who honestly and earnestly worships him. And generally, he's a giver of benedictions. But here, Lord Shiva is coming to Lord Krishna for benediction. Lord Shiva asked, he said, I want to witness your Braj pastimes. And I want to be in such a role that the dust of the lotus feet of you and Radharani and all the gopas and gopis can be upon my head. That is how glorious Lord Shiva understood Vrindavan to be. We were discussing this at Uddhava Kund. Sometimes due to our ignorance, we come to Vrindavan thinking, I will be the proprietor, I will have some position, I will be a guru, or I will be a department head, or I will be like that. But Uddhava's coming to Vrindavan, praying and praying and praying to be a piece of grass. Brahma's praying to be the earth, where the dust of the feet of the Brijabasis will be on his head. And that is Mahadev Shiva's aspiration. Lord Shiva is willing to renounce Kailash. He's willing to renounce his Vaikuntha planet as Sada Shiva in the spiritual world to get an opulence millions of times greater. A chance to witness the pastimes of the Lord and get the dust of the feet of the Lord and his devotees on his head. So Lord Krishna fulfilled his desire, and Lord Shiva appeared as Nandeshwar Hill, which is where we are today, also known as Nandagram. Lord Shiva appeared as a hill, and with his five heads, there are five peak-like forms on this hill, it is said. And Lord Shiva is residing here since time immemorial, assisting in the Lord's eternal pastimes. Krishna blessed him that on top of your head, Nanda Maharaj, my father, will build his palace, and that is where I will reside. In the Yadu dynasty, there was a great soul of the name Devamidha. He had a Kshatriya wife and a Vaishya wife. From his Kshatriya wife, he gave birth to Surasena. Surasena gave birth to Vasudev, who married Devaki. And from his Vaishya wife, he gave birth to a very great soul named Parjanya. And Parjanya came to this Mahaban Vrindavan area, and he was the king of the cowherd men. He very much wanted children. Why did he want children? It's natural for a man and woman who are married to have children. But also, it was the Lord within his heart actually invoking this longing desire for children to facilitate his appearance in this world. Where we have just passed is a very, very sacred place in Brajbhumi. The deity of Asheshwara Mahadev. Parjanya Maharaj spent years and years worshipping that deity of Mahadev to have auspicious children. And he had 5 sons. And 2 daughters, yes? The 5 sons, Upananda, Abhinanda, Nanda, Sunanda, and Nandan. Glorious sons. And by the blessings of Lord Shiva and by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his grandson was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Nandanandana Krishna. So we should begin our worship of Nandagram by praying at the lotus feet of Asheshwar Mahadev that he will bestow upon us the benediction that we can absorb ourselves, body, mind, words, and life in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord in a prayerful mood, praying for pure unalloyed devotional service, humility toward the Vaishnavas, Guru and Krishna. And during our very, very auspicious visit to Nandagram, so Nanda Maharaj, although he was a middle son, Upananda, who was supposed to be the king when Parjanya retired, he wanted his younger brother to be the king because he took note of his exalted qualities and how much everyone loved him so much. So Nanda Maharaj, just to please his elder brother and others in Vrindavan, accepted the role as Brajendra, the king of Braj, and they were living here in Nandagaon. But for various reasons, especially because no son was being born to Nanda Maharaj, they moved closer to Yamuna, to Mahaban Gokul area, where Krishna and Balaram appeared. For about 3 years and 4 months, they remained in Gokul. And then, because of so many demons, Putana, Sakatasura, Trinavarta, big Arjuna trees falling on the ground, they decided to move to a more favorable place near the hill Govardhan. in the forest of Vrindavan. They went to Chatikar and Kamyavan and some other places and ultimately came back to Nandagram. And here at Nandagram, unlimited pastimes of Krishna Balaram are taking place. Especially Krishna was given charge of the cows here at Nandagram. That day is called Gopastami. It is glorified in the holy scriptures. We are at a place now which is very sacred to so many of Krishna's leelas, Terkadamba. Here at Terkadamba, Krishna would play his flute to call his cows. The power of Krishna's flute is the most extraordinary subject matter to discuss. It is described that Krishna would wake up early in the morning at Nanda Bhavan, and Yashodamai would give him bath, dress him, and decorate him very nicely. And Srimati Radharani, she would come from Yavat with her Sakhi friends to Pavan Sarovar, and she would cook breakfast for Krishna. And after taking breakfast, Mother Yashoda one day offered Krishna shoes. Because after all, he goes into the pastures all day long with the cows. And for Yashoda Mai, Krishna's feet are so soft and so delicate. And in the pastures, there's stones and there's rocks and there may be thorns. But Krishna told that, "I am Gopa. I am servant of cows. I cannot have what cows do not have. I will take shoes if you make shoes for all 900,000 cows that I take care of." Krishna preferred to go barefoot. And actually, there was not such thing as a thorn or a stone that would pierce Krishna's lotus feet. Because the land of Vrindavan, everything, by Brinda Devi's loving service, she made absolutely everything perfect for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. So Krishna would come down from his home to the beautiful jeweled goshala where the cows would spend the night. None of the cows at Nandagram would give any milk until they saw Krishna. None of the calves would drink a drop of milk until they had the darshan of Gopal. All night long, they were simply dreaming of Srinandanandana. And when they would wake in the morning, they would, in deep, intense feelings of separation, just waiting for Gopal to come so they could see his smiling face. And when Gopal would come with Balaram and his friends into the Goshala, there was a glorious kirtan that would take place amongst all the cows. From the love of their hearts, they would sing Krishna's glory according to their particular type of voice. Everyone. All the cows would be singing Krishna's glories and names with so much love and devotion by loudly, loudly mooing. And as they were mooing for instrumentation with their hooves, they would clump it on the ground and make very nice instrumentation. It was a beautiful kirtan. It was so sweet. It was Prem Sankirtan. And Krishna would come in and they would see him, and their mooing would increase in volume and increase in ecstatic love, and they would be pounding the floors with their hooves just celebrating the appearance of Krishna. It was like greeting the deities for them. And Krishna would smile. And each cow would feel that Krishna's smiling only at me. And in this way, Krishna would reciprocate the love with each and every cow's heart's desire. Yashoda Mai was also worried that these cows may trample on Krishna's feet in the pasture ground. But actually, those worries were created by Lila Shakti, by Yoga Maya, especially just to increase the sweetness of Yashoda's love. Because every single cow in Vrindavan loved Krishna just as a mother loves her own child. In fact, we know the story, how Krishna wanted to fulfill in full each of these cows' desires. During the Brahmavimohan Lila, he became each calf, so that literally each cow of Braj had Krishna as her own child to fulfill the desire. And each bull loved Krishna as a father loves a son. This is Vrindavan Dham. These cows and bulls and calves, many of them had descended from Goloka Vrindavan, especially to assist Radha and Krishna in their Prakata Lila in this world. When Krishna, Balaram and the Gopas would be leaving Vrindavan to enter into the forest, this was a very intense experience for all the Brijabasis. Yashoda Mai's heart would be pounding and pounding with imminent separation. As he'd be leaving, she would run out, "Do you have enough of this?" And she would give him a little more prasad, and then he'd walk a few steps, and then she'd run back, and she'd make sure that all of his limbs were healthy and safe, and then she'd come back and she'd give him another garland, and it was impossible for her to give up Krishna, even for a moment. And even the little children, the babies, who were too young to go out and herd the cows with Krishna, they would be crying and crying and crying because they were being left behind as Krishna was going out with his gopas, and the mothers were holding them. They were crying in separation. "Let me go, let me go, let me go." The Brijabasis would be stunned when Krishna would leave, because he would be gone until around the time that the sun sets. Very difficult. Mahaprabhu expresses the mood of the gopis and the gopas of Vrindavan, that in separation from Krishna, a moment seems like 14 years or more. In fact, the Braj gopis, they were criticizing Lord Brahma. How many of you have ever criticized Lord Brahma? But they criticized Lord Brahma, that he's such an imperfect creator. He made these eyelids. And when Krishna's standing right before them, when the eye blinks, it seems like a kalpa. It seems like millions of years not being able to witness the beautiful threefold bending form of Shamsunda. Krishna and his cowherd boys would be so happy. They were with all their cows for a day of playing. And the cowherd boys would be blowing their buffalo horns and playing their flutes, and they would be laughing and they were joking and dancing, and all the cows, their eyes, their beautiful lotus eyes, were just gazing upon Shyam Sundar as they entered the forest. But Krishna could feel the hearts and the separation of the Brijabasis at Nanda Bhavan. And he reciprocated with their love by playing upon his flute. Each cow, each calf, and each gopa and gopi that were in the village, when they heard the sound of Krishna's flute, they felt that he was playing it just for them. Krishna's form is the essence of all beauty and sweetness. And his face is very, very especially beautiful and sweet. And on his face, his smile is especially very beautiful and sweet. In fact, Krishna's smile is the source of all sweetness in all spiritual and material worlds. When Krishna would put his flute upon his lips, he would transmit the beauty and sweetness of his form and of his love into the hearts of the Brijabasis. The love of Krishna's heart would fill the holes of his flute and enter into the ears and the heart of his devotees, and actually manifest his form and his qualities within their hearts, embrace them within his hearts. The power of Krishna's flute. The Bhagavatam describes that when the river and the streams hear the flute, they become still like stone. And when stone is touched by the vibration of Krishna's flute, it melts like a river. And the river, sometimes when hearing Krishna's flute, flows upstream. And even Krishna is amazed by the power of his flute. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that the song of Krishna's flute is like a bird, and it just enters right into the ears and the heart of the gopis. And that bird of the song of Krishna's flute makes a nest in their ears and obstructs any other sound or any other thought. Krishna's flute is like the full moon, which invokes the rising tide of the love of the gopas and the gopis. Krishna's flute invokes the topmost love in the heart of each of his devotees. And the gopis, they praise how fortunate the lakes and rivers are, because the lakes and rivers are the mothers of the flute. And the bamboo trees are the father of the flute. Gopis are praising their good fortune to have a son like this. In fact, the gopis are praying to be born in a family of bamboo, of bamboo trees. Why? Because Krishna's flute is Krishna's constant companion. Krishna's flute is constantly on Krishna's lips. And the gopis, sometimes they would chastise flute, that you are stealing our property. And who are you? You're not even human. You have no caste. You're just dead wood. The fortune of Krishna's flute. Brahma Samhita describes that Krishna's flute is Krishna's constant companion. Sometimes he would hold it in his belt, sometimes in his hands, He would sleep with, Krishna sleeps with his flute. And even when Yashoda Mai bathes Krishna, he holds on to his flute. Of Krishna's flutes, it describes that when he was leaving Vrindavan, he would play his smallest of flutes, Venu, which is a wooden flute, which has six holes. Very sweet, beautiful song he would play, especially the fifth note. It would captivate the hearts of all the cows, all the calves, all the gopis, and all the gopis, according to a particular devotee's relationship with Krishna. Krishna would completely fulfill the desires of those devotees through the love of the song of his flute. It is described that Lord Brahma gave Nanda Maharaj this flute named Venu when he, as a gift for Krishna, before Krishna even appeared on earth. When Yashoda Mai was pregnant, and Nanda Maharaj presented Venu to Gopal. Radharani was Krishna's flute music teacher. There's a beautiful story that one day when Krishna left Nandagram to perform his cowherding Leela, he was at Govardhan and he was playing his flute so very, very sweetly. He was surrounded by many peacocks, and each of the peacocks, their hearts stolen by the song of Krishna's flute, danced. They danced so beautifully. They were weeping and crying in ecstasy as they were dancing. And then they appealed, Krishna, please dance with us. So Krishna was dancing with the peacocks. Krishna and the peacocks were in so much bliss, so happily dancing together. The flute became so blissful that the flute started playing itself without even being on Krishna's lips. Krishna was holding the flute in his left hand and it was loudly playing beautiful songs in ecstasy. Krishna was amazed by this. He was dancing, the peacocks were dancing, and the flute was playing. This was such a tremendously beautiful pastime that from morning till noon, the entire village of Braj was mesmerized. Everyone was stunned. Even the animals and the gopas, all they could do was just motionless watch this beautiful dance. The peacocks became tired. And then Krishna was just dancing by himself until Lord Balaramji embraced him. And Krishna smiled. And that smile touched the very core of the depths of the heart of each devotee. And then the king of the peacock with all of his peacock followers, they all humbly bow their heads at the lotus feet of Krishna. And the Raj of the peacocks prayed to Krishna that we are just simple, insignificant birds. We have no possessions whatsoever, but you have given us so much happiness. Therefore, the only opulence we have, we want to offer you. And he offered Krishna the only opulence they have, the peacock feather, to be put on his crown. The peacock, with tears of love flowing from his eyes, offered this feather to Krishna. And Krishna happily accepted it and put it in his beautiful hair and wears it always. Adair Kadamba, which is the area we are in now, is a beautiful forest of Kadamba trees. After Krishna performs his lila of herding cows through the day, he climbs on a particular Kadamba tree, and there he plays his flute and calls the names of each cow. Now there's innumerable cows. Sometimes it's numbered at 900,000. Yes. And Nandama Krishna organized the cows quite systematically. These 900,000 cows were organized in 108 different groups. And within these groups, they were categorized by their particular colors. There was white cow, white, red, black, and yellow. And within each of these four colors, there were 25 subdivisions. And when Krishna would call the cows, each and every cow would hear her particular name being called. Each cow is thinking, Krishna is calling only me. And he'd be on top of that Terakadamba, playing his flute and calling the cows, and all the cows from all directions would come to Terakadamba to gather around Krishna, gazing at his beautiful form, each one thinking, he's calling my name, he's looking at me. And if any particular cow was left behind, Krishna would get down from Terakadamba and go wherever that cow was and personally bring her back. And Krishna would count each cow and make sure every single one of them were safe and happy in their return to Nandagram. The cows that would just have calves were not allowed to go out with Krishna in the pasture grounds. They and their calves would spend the whole day intensely in separation. But Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book that when Krishna would play his flute, the mother cows would lift their big, long ears and just drink the nectar of Krishna's flute as it entered their heart. And the calves, even when they were sucking the milk from their mother, when they would hear Krishna's flute, they would become so stunned and enchanted. They would forget what they were doing. They would just stand there, stunned in ecstasy with their mother's nipples in their mouth. And tears would profusely fall from the eyes of the calves. And Prabhupada say, in that state, they would embrace Krishna heart to heart. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki. When Krishna would return to Nandagram in the evening, those cows with new calves would welcome Krishna by licking his body, licking and licking, with so much as an offering of their love. Like a mother sometimes kisses her son when he comes, they would lick the body of Krishna. And Krishna would pet those cows. And each cow was thinking that Krishna's especially petting only me. Srimati Radharani is living in Yavat, and Terakadamba is just between Nandagaon and Yavat. And Srimati Radharani would come in the morning toward Nandagram. And sometimes Krishna would be here early and he would meet with them. There are innumerable stories in this regard. Some are revealed to us in this world. Krishna would sometimes be milking his cows at Terakadamba, and he would see Srimati Radharani and gopis coming and he would he would squirt the milk right into Srimati Radharani's face, as well as her sakis, which they would be very, very happy to receive. Other times he'd be with his cows and he'd slap the cows and the cows would start running and they'd run right toward the gopis and everybody would be in different directions and Radharani would be alone and Krishna would meet her there. And in the evenings, or let us say at night, when Krishna would leave his father and mother's house quite secretly, he would often come to Ter Kadamba. He would climb on this tree and play the flute to attract the hearts of the gopis to come. And here at Ter Kadamba, Krishna, Sri Radha, and gopis would perform their Raslila at night. Very, very sacred place. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami made his bhajan kutir here at Ter Kadamba. In fact, that is where we are sitting at this very moment. This is the bhajan kutir of Sri Rupa Goswami, where he is eternally performing his bhajan. It is described that when he would sit under the Ter Kadamba tree and he would write his books, that tree, a Kalpa Briksha tree, would be very deeply reciprocating with the heart of Rupa Goswami. When Rupa Goswami is writing book like Lalita Madhava, describing the pangs of separation that Sri Radharani was feeling from Krishna, the leaves of the Kadamba tree would just feel that separation so intensely that they would just all instantly dry up and fall to the ground like the shedding of tears. And when he was writing books like Dana Keli Komudi, where joyful pastimes of Radha and Krishna meeting, under that tree he would be writing and the tree would feel his ecstasies. And whatever season it was, beautiful, it would just rejoice with green leaves growing and beautiful, beautiful golden Kadamba flowers blossoming. There is a very beautiful but instructive story of how Rupa Goswami wanted to make an offering to Sanatan Goswami. Later on, we will go to Pavan Sarovar. Sanatan Goswami's bhajan kutir was there. Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, their bhajan kutirs were quite close to each other here at Nandagram, as they were at Vrindavan. So Rupa Goswami wanted to make an offering to Sanatan Goswami, something very special. And Srimati Radharani understood the heart of her devotee. So she appeared as a very simple little girl, Brijabasi, dressed in very plain clothes. And she said, "My mother, she has sent me with some milk and some rice and some sugar for you to make nice kheer for your brother." So Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami accepted it. But he was so engrossed in speaking Hari Katha, Hari Va. This is exactly what it is. This is kheer. Your bancha kalpataruvyascha kripa sindhuvya eva cha patitanam pavanivyo vaishnavena. Very nice. I'm completely devastated with gratitude, with this incredible benediction. in you. So they were so engrossed in Harikatha that they forgot. So Radharani personally, with her own hands, cooked it and offered it to Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami presented that kheer to Sanatan Goswami, and they drank it together. As soon as they tasted it, tears were pouring from their eyes, their hairs were standing on end, their limbs were trembling, their voices were choked up, they couldn't even speak anymore. They were in ecstasy. Sanatan Goswami, what type of kheer is this? Where did you get this? And Rupa Goswami explained that this little girl, she came and she presented the ingredients and she cooked it herself and she gave it to me to give to you. And Sanatan Goswami, that was Srimati Radharani. How could you do this? How could you accept service from Srimati Radharani? She is Vrindavaneshwari. She is our supreme worshipable goddess. We are her eternal servants of her maidservants. Our being in Vrindavan is here only to serve the wishes of Srimati Radharani, not to engage Srimati Radharani in our service. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami were ashamed that they accepted service from Sri Radha. Their life, their soul, their only desire is to serve. But still, the taste of that kheer was so incredible, they couldn't give up drinking it. They were rolling on the ground, just drinking it and chanting loudly the holy name. Herein, the six Goswamis are very, very practically demonstrating Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's beautiful prayer. Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janamani janmanishwari bhavatad bhakti rahaita kitvai. I do not want wealth. I do not want the pleasures of the opposite sex. I do not want fame or scholarship, followers. I don't even want freedom from suffering. I only want to serve you unconditionally, birth after birth after birth. This is the very, very unique quality of the great souls in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. They don't want to ask Krishna for anything but the chance to serve and please him and please his devotees. This is actually what it means to be servant. In the parampara of Lord Chaitanya, being servant means this. To dedicate one's body, mind, words, and life for the pleasure, some sadhir hari toshanam, of Lord Hari. My Lord, if you want to put me in a diseased condition, if you want to break my heart, if you want to embrace me, you can do anything you want to me. I'm your servant, unconditionally. Bhakti Vinod prays, Manaso deho geho jokichumo arpiluntu arpadi nandakishore. Everything is yours. My body, my mind, my words, my home, my family, my wealth, my everything is yours, Nandanandana. If you want to kill me, kill me. If you want to protect me, you can protect me. It doesn't matter. I'm your servant. Deal with me any way you please. That is pure devotional service. Most people worship God asking for personal benedictions. Give me husband, give me wife, give me wealth, give me health. Give me good grades in my exams. So many demands we make to God. Yes? How many people every day are going to church or to synagogue or to the masjid or to the temples of the various demigods, just demanding from God, bowing down, making offerings, doing pujas? I'll never forget when I came down from Himalayas in 1971. I was in Delhi. Can I tell a story? And it was amazing what I saw. Near Connaught Place, there was this temple of Ganapati. And I didn't know what is Ganapati. I didn't know anything. I just, you know, I was just meditation and living with sadhus, but I didn't know all of the details of the deities. So this family, a husband, a man and his wife and his children, they were just doing a puja, and they were with so much feeling and intense emotion. They were just doing this puja. There was Brahmins doing mantras, and they were chanting the mantras with their eyes closed, just crying out these mantras, and they were offering gifts, and they were offering flowers, and they were doing yajnas and so many, and they were so into it. I was thinking, these people are really deep. I want what they have. So I sat there for about 2 hours while they were going through all the rituals with so much emotion. And I just sat there watching, just thinking, you know, whatever, these are yogis. They have something very special. So when it was all over, I went to the father and I said, can you please tell me, you know, what is it that you have done and how did you do it? And he told me. He said, I'm starting a new business and we're worshiping Ganesh to get lots of money from our business. I was really culture shocked after living with these vairagis in the Himalayas. This was too much for me. But factually, that's what most religion is about. Dharma prajita kaita bhakta paramaniramatsaranam satam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the crest jewel of all literatures. Even Vedavyas was unhappy sitting Saraswati River in Badrikashram. And Narada Muni told him why. Because all your literatures, your four Vedas, your Upanishads, your Mahabharata, your Puranas, your Itihastas, they are all, yes, the essence is there in all of them, but they're all mixed up with Artha, Kama, Dhamma, and Moksha. Desire for sense gratification, desire for piety, philanthropy, religiosity, desire for wealth, and desire for liberation from suffering. Anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karmanyanabhita. Anukulena Krishna Nushilanam Bhaktiruttama. Sri Rupa Goswami, in his Bhajan Kutir, he gave us this verse. What is it that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give? Pure, unalloyed, unconditional service to the Lord. Without even the single taint of desire for sense gratification, elevation to heavenly planets, mystic powers, or even the slightest desire for liberation. Lord Chaitanya taught Sanatana Goswami that story of Saravagya, the astrologer. He said, the real nectar of the treasure of the goal of life, you have to know exactly where to find it. In the northern direction is a big black snake representing Jnanakanda, devouring our individuality through mental speculation and the desire for liberation. And in another direction, there's a yaksha, a ghost that will haunt you, the desire for mystic powers. And in another direction, there are bees, that wasp that will sting you and bite you in the form of karmakanda, the desire for sense gratification. But if you go in the eastern direction and just dig a little earth, just a little, you'll find that treasure, that nectar. And that is the path, the Upasana Kanda, the path of unconditional love, devotional service. That is what Sri Rupa Goswami has given us. And yes, Srimati Radharani and Lord, who is the very goddess of devotion, the ultimate deity of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, she came to personally render menial service to Rupa and Sanatan by cooking this kheer. And they were ashamed that they have accepted service. Please understand the magnitude of their consciousness. They were multimillionaires. They left their beautiful palaces to sleep under trees. They left the finest foods to be beggars and just get some coarse brudge rotis. They left their magnificent wardrobes to just wear discarded cloth as kopan and chadar. They gave up everything to serve the order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were constantly engrossed in chanting the holy names, hearing the glories of the Lord, excavating holy places of pilgrimage. They gave up everything to live the most difficult possible lives by material calculations just to serve. And here, one time, Radharani reciprocates to serve them, and they feel utterly condemned that they're accepting something. This is what it means to be servant. Therefore, Vedavyas wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, which kicks out everything else except unconditional, unmotivated, loving service to Radha and Krishna and reveals their beautiful pastimes in Vrindavan. Vrindavan Das Thakur explains in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat that the title Das is the ultimate attainment. Prabhupada gave it to us so easily. In order to actually attain the title Das, you have to go beyond yoga, beyond jnana. You have to go beyond all religious rituals. You actually have to come to a platform of yogi namapi sarvesham madgate nantadatmana shradavam bhajate yomam samay yukta tamamata. Krishna ends the yoga chapter of the Gita. Of all yogis, he who abides in me with love and faith is most intimately united with me, and yoga is highest of all. That's what it means to be servant. To actually be das is the highest destination in all of existence. There's nothing higher that we can pray for than to actually live up to the names we're given, Das. And Mahaprabhu even brought that to a higher level. Higher than Das is Gopi Bharatur Patakamalayor Das, 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 Anu, Das. Actual service means our heart and all of our energies are for the pleasure of the Vaishnavas, Gurudev, and Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya, of the 9 processes of devotional service, which is most important? And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately replied, the chanting of the holy name.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
But we must chant in a spirit of das, 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 anudas. Therefore, Mahaprabhu taught us the process of chanting Trinadapi sunichena taror ivasihishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Yesterday during Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day celebration, his very beloved god brother, His Holiness Bhakti Vaibhav Puri Maharaj, was very strongly stressing, chanting Harinam and this jewel of verses, Trinadapi Sunichena. There is no service greater than that. So here at Nandagram, Krishna's eternal home, we have come. I'd like to speak very briefly about some of the places we'll be visiting. We'll go from here to Brindakund, where we have Dinabandhu Prabhu, who will pour out the love and devotion of his heart in this most sacred place and enchant our hearts. From Brindakund, we will go to Pavan Sarovar. From Pavan Sarovar, we will go up the hill to Nanda Bhavan, to the house of Nanda and Yashoda. There we'll see the deities of Krishna Balaram, Yashoda, Nanda, Radharani, Sudama, and Madhu Mangal. They're all there waiting for us. In fact, Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Nandagram in a cave on Nandeshwar Mountain, he found deities of Krishna Balaram, Nanda, and Yashoda. And he worshipped them with great love. And it is explained that later on, Sanatana Goswami actually installed them. There's also a place called Haubalau. Whether we actually can bring 2,000 people there, or whether you just see through your ears. But sometimes Krishna would play with his friends and they would be so engrossed with play. Sometimes it would take massive, incredible demons to distract their attention from their play so they would eat their lunch. So one time Yashoda Mai told Rohini Devi that tell Krishna Balaram lunch is ready, Nanda Maharaj wants to take with them. So Rohini Devi, she called out, Krishna Balaram, come home, Nanda Maharaj is waiting for you, it's a special day, you take lunch with them. But they just completely ignored Rohini. They were so much immersed playing with their friends. So Yashoda Mai had to personally come out. Prabhupada tells one story where Mother Yashoda was scolding Krishna Balaram, come, come, come. And then they started leaving, and then the friend said, oh, you are leaving right in the summit of our play. We will not play with you again. So then Krishna Balaram ran away from from Yashoda Mai and continued playing. So very difficult. Krishna Balaram and their gopas, they really took their play seriously. Because it was so ecstatic. The reciprocation of love was so deep, was so profound that they couldn't stop. So one time, to somehow or other get Krishna Balaram home, Yashoda Mai, she would do this sometimes. Play different tricks. She said, the how is coming. Krishna said, what is a how? Said, it's a horrible demon. What kind of demon? Said, big, sharp, long teeth, huge mouths, big, big, angry red eyes and pointed ears and four legs and claws. And they especially hunt and eat children like you. Krishna said, I don't believe in hows. And then all of a sudden, Yashoda Mai, ah! Ah! And and ran away. The hawa is coming! The hawa is coming! And she ran and ran. And when Krishna saw her mother Yashoda running and Balaram, they ran and followed her. They ran all the way home. And Nanda Maharaj was waiting at the table. And they sat down and they started eating prasad. And Krishna Balaram were telling Nanda Maharaj, "You should have saw what we saw today. A hawa came to attack us. He had big, long, sharp teeth and a big, big, wide-open mouth and angry red eyes and pointed ears and claws and four legs. He was going to eat us, but we barely escaped." So to depict that pastime, there are deities of the hows. It's called Hau Balao. Very special place. There's also Nanda Baitak, which is a sitting place of Nanda Maharaj, where the assemblies would be Upananda, Abhinanda, Sunanda, Nanda, Nandan. They would all come together and discuss so many things. Just like when, after Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, they were discussing, how wonderful is Krishna? How is this possible, Nanda Maharaj? That he killed Sakatasura, he killed Putana, he killed Trinavarta, he killed Batsasura, he killed Agasura, so many, and still, you and Yashoda Mai, you chastise him, and you treat him just like a naughty boy. As far as we understand, Nanda Maharaj said, "You have quoted to us about Gargamuni what he has said. We think that you shouldn't treat Krishna like such an ordinary child anymore." And Nanda Maharaj just laughed at them. He just laughed at them. He said, "You speak whatever you want, but I know Krishna. You're talking about how he's a great yogi or he's some powerful like Narayan, but look, what kind of great yogi? Yogis control their senses. Krishna's always hungry. If we don't give him butter, he cries. What yogi is that?" And yogis control their anger. But if we don't give Krishna his butter or his food on time, he'll take rocks and he'll angrily break the pots. Sometimes he'll even pass urine on the gopis' floors and make. And gopis are, and yogis are supposed to be fearless. But when there's thunder at night, Krishna will run and jump in our arms, crying and trembling until we kiss him and embrace him. And he's so naughty. Yogis are supposed to be well-behaved. So naughty. And yogis are all supposed to be truthful. But Krishna's always telling lies. He steals butter. We say, he steals dirt. "Did you steal dirt?" "No, I didn't steal dirt. I didn't steal butter." So you may say whatever you like, but in my experience and Yashoda Mai's experience, we understand that he is simply an ordinary, beautiful little child. And if we don't teach him how to behave properly, then what will become of him when he grows up? And then Nanda Maharaj would be speaking about Krishna's beautiful, beautiful, mischievous, naughty pastimes, and he would be in ecstasy, and everybody would just be laughing and crying, and they would forget the whole purpose of the meeting. Which was to warn Nanda Maharaj not to discipline Krishna. In this way, the Vrijabhasis were always immersed here at Nandagram in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and singing his sweet names. There's also Yashoda Kund, place where Mother Yashoda would take her bath and often bathe Krishna and Balaram. And close to that is a temple of Lord Narsingadev that was for the protection of Krishna. Gargamuni gave them that deity of Narsingadev to worship. There is Moti Kund. That is not so far from Pavan Sarovar. If you remember when we were at Malihari Kund at Govardhan, near Radha Kund, We told the story of Raghunath Das Goswami's Mukta Charita. Well, the place that Krishna grew his garden of multicolored, fragrant pearls is Motikund here at Nandagram, that were watered with the milk of the Surabhi cows given by the loving hands of Yashoda Mai. There are wonderful, wonderful holy places here. Not far is Yavat, Udupkyari, and I'll end with just one more place. One day Krishna was standing on Lord Shiva's head, and he played his flute, and Lord Shiva in ecstasy melted, and Krishna's footprint was left on the head of Lord Shiva. And that footprint is still here today. It is called Charan Pada Pahadi. And if possible, we will go there and have the darshan of Krishna's lotus footprint. At this time, we request Dinabandhu Prabhu to inspire us with his beautiful realizations. And then we will go to Brindakund. Yes? And from Brindakund, Krishna will direct us. The temple opens at 4 o'clock, so we'll be taking darshan at that time. Thank you very much. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Let us pray here at Terakadamba for the causeless mercy of Sri Rupa Goswami, that we may honestly, earnestly dedicate our lives and souls to be Rupanukas, to follow the path that he has given as the servant of the servant of his loving servants. Thank you very much.